Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Bhutang dhammang sangkang namassami. So it's the dreaded Saturday night talk after the one pra. Ajahn Pasno invited me to say a few words. So I've just come back from a tudong. The word tudong in Thai means sort of a spiritual journey or spiritual walk. And I had recently done one in India. The month of February, I was in India for a month. And had a very wonderful, inspiring time in India. And decided this time I wouldn't go to any of the holy sites. I would just go to land in a place called Calcutta and then up to Patna and just walk north from Patna to still different Buddhist historical sites, but none of the four major holy sites. And it was really very deeply meaningful for me. And I said to myself, you know, I've got to try this in America. We have to see if this can be done in America. And I was confident at the time that, you know, there were so many good people coming forth in Bihar to offer food and lodging and just chai, you know, whatever it was they were offering, that I thought to myself, I could do this anywhere in the world, I thought, you know. So I'll see if I can do it in California, see if it's possible there. So I came back and I was floating the idea around with some of the monks here, and Southern California, it's not the same as, you know, it's not like exactly Buddhist kind of, you know, open mind, you know, left wing Buddhist kind of culture or anything like that, and may not be safe. And I thought, well, I know what I'll do. I was giving a talk down in Berkeley, and so thought I could ask Reverend Hung Shur, what does he think about the idea? Because he did it for a couple of years back in the 70s, and everyone's, you know, they love his books and his memoirs about the experience. And so we go to this monastery down in Berkeley and pay respects to him, and I just say, so Venerable Hung Shur, I'm thinking about doing this tudong in California. What do you think? And his first words were, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. He goes, your number one, the first thing I'd be concerned about is drive-by shootings. So this whole plan was kind of backfiring. But I appreciated the reflections. He said, you know, it's life has become in many ways, yes, Buddhism is better known. And a monk is more recognizable, but it's also not the same as the 70s. And what he was saying is that, you know, there's a lot more violence. There's gangs and in California, and going through LA might not be very safe, especially without any money or any contacts. And he says, if you are going to do it, you really have to do your homework. And so I appreciated that reflection. And I think it was actually that same day. There was another Indian woman who comes here, and she also didn't think it was a good idea. But then she said, doesn't the Buddha say in the Sabbasava Sutta that a monk should avoid certain things? Like he says that you should avoid a wild elephant, you should avoid a big hole in the ground. And this really impressed me, actually, that somebody would know the suttas that well, that they can just off the top of their head quote a sutta with some very practical advice for a monk, that, you know, you can't just kind of just rely on faith and kind of just do anything you want and say the Dhamma will take care of you. you got to think about what you're doing as well in life, and you know, is it safe? Is it a good idea to go? And that actually really caused me to think. You know, is it safe? And at the end of the day, what I decided I'd do is I'd start my walk, and within the first couple of days, I would feel it out. And if it felt not safe, or it felt that I wasn't going to get food, or if it wasn't going to work, then I would not hesitate to call it off. So that was my kind of plan. So a few days before, I did have one unfortunate, a few days before the trip, I fell off a ladder, sprained my ankle. And that was kind of almost also put an end to my trip. But I decided it was good enough that I would give it a go. And so tonight, you know, Ajahn Pasna said, maybe you can say a few words about your tudong. People are going to be asking questions. They're going to want to hear some stories. And it's, I have to admit, it's still kind of a bit of a garble, like all these kind of experiences in my mind and names of towns and different images of places and people. It just seems like such a full month. It hasn't been quite fully processed, actually. So I thought I'd just share some of the kind of images or experiences that stand out most, and maybe there'll be some Dhamma themes or just some good reflections that we can all just take away and use in our lives or just think about and see. One of the questions that I was asked a lot is, why am I doing this? What's the purpose? And so the purpose is, there's actually many, if you think about it, it's not really that there's a purpose, but there's benefits. And I see so many benefits to it. And I think one of the main ones is living in a monastery. Of course, the purpose of monastic life, of Buddhist practice, is the development of the heart and liberation of the heart. And you live in a monastery and you have routines and you have schedules. And we have the vinaya, the rules that we live by. And it's although, of course, we try and guard against it the best we can, it's very easy to happen that you kind of fall into patterns. And predictable, life can become very predictable. And while that's an advantage in many ways, and it's something that we use hopefully as consciously as we can, it can also be a certain security can come from that. And it can lead to a certain complacency. So I'm sure that this is also the case for lay people sometimes. Your job, you get kind of good at your job, or at least good enough, and you know the environment at work is, you kind of slip into work and you know the scene, you do your work, you come home, you know, the same TV program is on that you watch on a daily basis, and it's good sometimes to throw yourself into situations that are uncertain. Throw yourself into situations that are challenging, things that you don't really know what to expect. And that's a neat experience, because the sort of crutches that you may not even realize you've developed over the years, if you kind of put yourself into new situations, situations of complete, you don't have a clue what's going to happen, it really becomes apparent where you've been relying on some kind of predictable environment and situation. So let's see here. So that was one big part of my motivation, was simply to shake things up, kind of throwing myself into a situation where I really didn't know what to expect. I had no idea really how it was going to go at all, and even more so than India, I think. Another thing is that throughout the walk, this became apparent as time went on, but certainly the whole purpose of the walk one of the purposes of the walk is to arouse wholesome mind states in oneself and in other people. And just the feeling of, so you've left the monastery behind, you've got your bowl, you've got your robes. There's not really any place that you have to be. You know, there's no deadline, there's no schedule, really. There's no expectations. I feel pretty much at peace with whatever might happen. Let's say I get food or I don't get food. You know, I've fasted before. That's okay. That's not the end of the world. In that kind of situation, it's. I find it very easy for the heart to be free and to have wholesome thoughts, generosity, appreciation, gratitude for the situation I'm in. And with my exchange for people, the exchanges that I have with people, in situation after situation, there was a feeling that it was inspiring, mutually inspiring. people would stop, they'd ask questions. I'd be walking along the road. I don't know how this would happen daily. People would pull over, and they wouldn't even offer me a ride or food or anything. They'd just offer me a bottle of water. And that was curious. It happened half a dozen, you know, maybe 10 times. People just pulling over and offering me a bottle of water and then driving off. People, of course, I mean, people say, you know, why are you dressed like that? I mean, that was a very common question. And it struck me, you know, that's one of the benefits of being dressed like this, is that people stop and ask you questions. If I was just simply just trying to be a Buddhist practitioner and dressed normally, it would be much more difficult, probably impossible, to do something like this without having to ask for something from people. But in this situation, daily people would pull over. They'd ask me, what am I doing? Am I a Buddhist monk? It seems now, certainly, except for once I got towards one place called Laguna Beach. No, there's a good reason for this. Laguna Beach, they didn't recognize me at all. They all thought I was Hare Krishna. And but other than the Laguna Beach, plus or minus 20 miles north or south, everyone seemed to recognize that I was a Buddhist monk. And they seemed to be very... A lot of positive energy. So you're walking down the highway and every day there'd be people honking, people waving, offering me rides, which I would almost universally decline. And all of that was really, you know, it's really touching. The people, they feel that a Buddhist monk in their minds, or just a monk, just somebody who's doing something, who's committed themselves to a spiritual lifestyle, and they're willing to make it visible, is something that they appreciate. This is obvious. At least some people did, anyways. Of course, those who don't appreciate it, for the most part, they just stay silent, I suppose. I didn't have anybody... Well, actually, I had one situation where... There was one town where there was a huge mural in the central part of the town, and it was of a Christian alms mendicant. And the monk actually looked a lot like me. The robes did. So I'm in this town. These kids drove by once, and they kind of roll down the windows, and they kind of stick their hands out. They go, "Hail Satan!" I guess thinking I'm a. That's their way of kind of snubbing a Christian monk, I guess. So walking down, for the most part, a question I get asked a lot is, "Where would I stay?" And the northern part of this trip, I would stay on the beaches a lot. It was no problem staying on beaches. They were completely deserted. And as I went down south more, there was more people on the beaches, but B, the beaches seemed to have hours, which is kind of a funny concept. So you'd have open and closed. All the beaches were closed, and you were supposed to be off the beach at a certain time. Up north, that wasn't the case. So I would sleep on the beaches. Sometimes it was just like, as far as the eye could see, just this empty beach, and I was the only one on it. And a few times I stayed in that situation and just decided to fast, just because it was so quiet and peaceful. Walking through Big Sur area, I got a ride from Rick. Was that his name? Rick, I think it's Rick. Rick from the rickshaw, one half of the rickshaw. Ryan
Shaw or Rick Williams?
That's right, it's one of those two. I met them both. They both gave me a meal at Monterey, I think it was. And then one of them had to go somewhere, but the other one, I'm afraid I can't remember which one it was, the name. But he drove me quite a ways he said it would just be like about 10 or 15 miles. I think it turned out to be more like 30 or 35. And he took me to a Christian monastery. What's that place called?
Camogans.
Yeah. Where Brother David Steindl Ross is. But they didn't have space for me, so that wasn't a problem. I just I would slept outside. But that was a beautiful area, the Big Sur area, walking along Big Sur. And at some point, a man kind of pulls over, I think it was that same day, and just asked what I was doing and if I wanted a ride, and I said no, but I'm walking to such and such a point, And he said, well, why don't you come stay at my place? And he was like a really down-to-earth kind of guy, and he kind of a bit of an ex-hippie, because he had that feel to him. I said, yeah, okay. So he takes me to his place, and we get to, he's kind of driving down to his place, and the first thing is this his car is like this beat-up kind of old, it's just a beat-up kind of unit. And we drive, we get to this kind of, his driving into his yard, and it's like a beachfront property on, the Big Sur area, and he's got this electric gate, and kind of the gate opens up super slow, and we drive in. And I'm thinking, wow, this somehow I wasn't expecting to see a piece of property like this. And it wasn't his, actually. It was his, but he was the caretaker. So he let me stay in his place, and the guy who owned it wasn't some Hollywood producer, and he wasn't there for the weekend. So he said, I can stay as long as I wanted. And it was this beautiful beachfront property, this incredible beachfront property. And I wound up staying there a couple of nights, and he fed me for a couple of days there, and it was a very nice stay. And the next day I had this neat exchange. I remember one of these days nearby here. It was early in the morning. I slept on the beach or somewhere in that area, and I walked to, I think it was a place called Ragged Point. And I didn't have any food, and there wasn't really a shopping market around. And there was one little kind of restaurant-y kind of place, and it wasn't open yet. It was like 8 in the morning, so, and there was a picnic table in front. So I thought I'd just sit down and wait until it opened, see what transpired. And this guy on a motorcycle kind of pulls up, gets off the bike, takes his helmet off, looks at me really kind of angry. He goes, why are you dressed so funny? I go, oh, I'm a Buddhist monk. And this is a neat exchange, because it's just dealing with negative energy that comes at you. And I didn't feel fear. I felt a bit kind of hesitant at first. And I just had to remind myself, look, refuge here, Yadiko, is just be sincere and just roll with his energy and don't get brittle. Don't get hard so that you kind of break. Like, just kind of roll with whatever energy he throws at you. And just be with it. And so he goes, why are you dressed so funny? And I go, I'm a Buddhist monk. And he goes, why don't you just get a job? And I say, well, I have a job. He goes, yeah, what do you do? And I say, well, I meditate. That was the first thing that came to my mind. I wasn't really sure what to say, actually. But I said, well, I meditate. And he goes, oh, yeah, is that like working for God? And I go, well, I wouldn't phrase it that way. But it was really interesting. At this point, there was a shift in the conversation. It was like suddenly it went from being really kind of angry, aggressive, to like, yeah, well, what does that mean? And so he goes, yeah, you work for God? Does that mean you work for God? Well, I wouldn't phrase it that way. And he goes, yeah, because I work for the devil, is what he said. And then he thinks for a minute. He goes, good money. But he goes, actually, it's a lot of suffering. And I go, yeah, I believe it. And I could really see in his eyes that he was speaking, he was honest here, that he, on both working for the devil and being a lot of suffering. And I go, yeah, well, it is suffering. I can imagine it probably is suffering. And he goes, yeah. He goes, you better believe it. But that was kind of the end of it. But it kind of left me with, it was completely diffused the situation. And later on that same day, like maybe 10 miles down or 5 miles down, there was another kind of shop where there's food, and someone had offered me a meal there. And I was sitting there having a meal, and he shows up again. And he kind of walks into the kind of food court, and he goes, hey, it's my monk friend. And he puts up his two fingers. And I was thinking, yeah, it's kind of, kind of neat. Like, he had positive energy to contribute to me now, as opposed to kind of... that was interesting. So that was a neat experience, kind of working with negative energy. There was only one other exchange where it was negative energy, and that was in San Luis Obispo. And I was walking along the street, and there was a couple of guys, and I think they were gang members. I don't know how to tell a gang member, but they looked like they were gang members. They just looked mean and coarse, and like chains and tattoos and funny haircuts, And they were, you know, just, you know, really aggressive. They were really kind of coarse in their speech. And we were both walking in the same direction, or they were and myself. And they were kind of passing me, kind of approaching me. And as they passed me, what did they say? Oh, yeah, they made another comment about the clothing, right? I can't remember what it was, but it was coarse and it was unfriendly. And it was along the same lines, like, why are you dressed that way or something? Only not phrased quite that way. And I said, well, yeah, I'm a Buddhist monk. And again, it was the same principle, just roll with their negativity. And it was a neat exchange because I didn't feel the slightest bit of fear, and I didn't feel certainly aggressive. I just felt, yeah, you know, they're going to ask me what's with the clothing. I'll say I'm a Buddhist monk. And I don't want to play that card too much because sometimes if somebody, they can almost appear kind of self-righteous in their kind of good intentions or kind of smug. So I don't want to do that too much, but just, yeah, I'm a Buddhist monk. And then the next comment that they said was also something aggressive. But this time, I won't be able to communicate it unless you can see my bodily expression, but they looked physically afraid of me. Because it's almost like they wanted to lean into me and kind of be aggressive, but because it would have just seemed so I felt that because it was would have been so absurd to be aggressive towards me, that they were so kind of, you might say, kind of morally in the wrong. And their response was like a fear of me, and they kind of, it almost felt, I felt shielded. And so then they just walked by me and they kind of carried on. And yeah, it was just a little bit of a less, again, it just kind of reaffirmed how the power of, I think what it is, the power of sincere, like just being sincere. And not, like I say, not playing, you don't want to over a lot, like I wouldn't want to just kind of walk into central LA, just kind of, yeah, I'm a Buddhist, hi everybody, I'm a Buddhist monk. But just, you know, just the power of just, yeah, you know, I don't have anything to, I'm not trying to, I have no, I'm not really fearful and I don't feel aggressive, and it seems to be a bit of a protection. Again, you want to use that sort of reflection with wisdom. I had one of the, this is just an interesting story, and I'll share this. So I'm walking along Highway 1. It's late at night, or not late, late in the afternoon, maybe 6 p.m. And on my right-hand side is a military camp, military base. And there's kind of like a drive along the highway. It's kind of like those kind of truck weighing stations where it kind of comes off the highway and it goes back onto the highway. But there's no weighing station there. All there is a little kind of shack with a roof and two walls at 90-degree angles from each other, so just two walls, and a bench that goes around both sides of the walls. And that was it. And I see this kind of these benches and this kind of roof, and I'm thinking, man, I'm just really tired. I just really want to sit down. And there is a sign on top under this shack. It says military drop-off. I don't have a clue what that means, but I think it's harmless enough. It's just a bench. It's right on the highway. There's no sign that says do not enter. So I'm just going to sit against this wall and just rest for 20, 30 minutes. And then just as I'm, actually just about the time I'm ready to leave, actually, I see out of the corner of my eye in the military camp, which is behind a wall, kind of behind a fence, a police car just driving by super slowly. And I'm thinking, I should probably get out of here before anything happens. So I'm still almost half asleep because I think I fell asleep there for a while. And I just kind of gather my energy and I'm about to stand up. And just then the policeman, he got out of the car and he walked around and he came the long way around. And he just very quietly kind of appeared in my field of vision. And he had his hand on his gun. And he goes, and he just looks at me, and he looks actually scared. And he says, what's with the clothing? I go, again, it's kind of refrain that I said, well, I'm a Buddhist monk. and he goes, you got any weapons on you? I go, and I just go, look, no, I honestly don't have any weapons on me. He goes, let's see some ID. And I go, yeah, no problem. So I just kind of pull up my passport and I show him my passport. And he looks through it and he goes, well, how long have you been in the country? I go, well, about three years. And he goes, have you left the country at any time recently? And I'm thinking about Canada and I go, well, let's see. I was last in Canada like 2.5 years ago or something. And he goes, you haven't been out of the country since? I go, no. He goes, not once. I go, no, no. And then he goes, what about India? And I go, oh yeah, there's India. I was in India. I was in India just two months ago for a month. But that was just for a pilgrimage. And he says, he goes, pilgrimage. I go, yeah, what Buddha, you know, that was the land of the Buddha, and that was where the Buddha was born and lived. And so I went to India for a month. So he says, how much money do you have on you? I go, well, I don't carry money, I don't touch money. He goes, well, where are you staying? I said, well, I've been staying on the beaches and staying like at the side of the road, some nice quiet places, places that are legal and clean, and I'm very clean, you know, I don't leave a mess. And then at this point, he's trying to put all the pieces together, and he says, so you're really a Buddhist monk? I go, yeah, I'm really a Buddhist monk. And he goes, well, what do you eat? I go, well, I just rely on the generosity of people. And he goes, you've got to be kidding me. I go, no. And he goes, well, look, let's go. I'll go, let me buy you a meal. And I go, look, you know, that's really, I really appreciate that, but I can't eat after midday, you know, all these rules that we have. I said, I can't eat after midday. And he's just kind of shaking his head, and he's really amazed. And he goes, sir, he puts out his hand, he goes, you just made my day. And, so it was kind of a nice story, actually. And then he did say somewhere in the middle there, he says, yeah, just, he goes, do you have any idea how suspicious this looks? He goes, the way you're dressed, and he goes, you know, we're on security threat level bravado ever since Osama bin Laden has been killed. And you're right beside a military camp and you're dressed like that. So anyways, I was really impressed with both the fact that how quick he was ready to change his perceptions, and yet at the same time he was very careful, and it left me with a very good impression in that instance. And just another situation regarding police officers. I had four encounters with police officers, and they were all exceptionally nice encounters, and left me with a very favorable impression of the police in California, Highway Patrol. This one, I was in Redondo Beach, and I was just walking down the streets. It was early in the morning. He just pulls up beside me, and he rolls down the passenger window, and he just looks at me, and he doesn't say anything, and I just stop, and I look at him. And I don't say anything, and he smiles and he says something like, "Are you really a Buddhist monk?" I go, "Yeah, I'm really a Buddhist monk," and he says, "You know," he goes, "My mom's Catholic," and he goes, "And I'm Catholic, and she's been taking me to church now for 20 years, and it just doesn't make any sense to me," and I go. I go, well, you know, I can actually, there's a lot of stuff about Catholic churches that don't make sense to me either. And he goes, Buddhism? He goes, you guys, what do you guys teach in Buddhism? And I started going into I didn't know what really immediately how to answer that, so I started talking about karma and stuff like that. And he goes, I thought there was four beliefs or something like, four beliefs and eight steps. And I go, well, that's actually pretty good. It's for the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. Anyways, this conversation went on for a good 20 minutes. And he was parked his car with his little lights on at the side of the road while cars are kind of going back and forth. And he was, and this was just, it was really interesting, his openness. And he said to me, and this made me really think about what it's like being a policeman and how a lot of compassion. I felt a lot of compassion for him, the way he phrased it. He says, you know, as a police officer, he goes, we're trained to assume the worst of everybody. And he says, we just have to do that. When we see somebody, if there's nothing suspicious about them, we don't notice them. And if there's anything suspicious, we're trained to go through all the different permutations of what could be wrong. And he says, and not only that, he goes, whenever we do stop anybody or have any encounters with anybody, it's almost always because something's happened. And he goes, we see the worst of humanity. Like, that's why we stop them, is because we've seen something wrong. And he goes, it's extremely difficult keeping your heart open when you're in that situation. And I just listened to him, and he says, I've been doing this for 20 years. And he goes, he was telling me he's really tried his best to be a good police officer and to serve the community, but he goes, it's really hard keeping the heart open. And you get into the situation where, he goes, it's easy to slip into us versus them. You know, where you're like the police, the policeman, and then there's everyone else that you're just kind of looking for, what are they doing wrong? I just felt, wow, that must be incredibly hard, especially if you care about your heart and you're trying to be, you're trying to keep your heart in a wholesome state. I mean, that must be awful. And I pointed out to him, obviously, you know, he even asked about the karma of killing somebody as a police officer. I said, it's a challenging question, but certainly your intention, you know, overwhelmingly, hopefully, your intention is to serve the community and to protect those who are innocent. So that's obviously a very noble intention. Killing is always has an element there's always an element of unwholesome, something unwholesome going on when you take the life of somebody intentionally. But it's obviously very mixed karma. And I said, I would assume that with an intention to protect the innocent people, that would be the major part of that karma would be the good intention there. And I also just, it gave me pause to reflect on how valuable it is being a monk, where it's just the opposite of a policeman. You, on the one hand, you are training yourself to do as much as you can to see the best in people and yourself. And then conversely, you see the best in people. And basically people who don't have any, could care less about virtue or kindness, they don't come to monasteries. And so that was food for thought there. Just another aspect about why I did this walk, or why you do a tudong anywhere. It's a very basic kind of training in energy. And there were times when it was just the amount of the resources, the internal resources, you just have to keep going sometimes when you just totally don't want to keep going. There was one place in it was a classic example. It was Ventura. Coming to Ventura, beautiful little town, by the way, I loved it. And I really pushed myself to get to Ventura because I can't remember why, but it was a long walk that day, like let's say 25 miles, which was longer than my usual walk. And I couldn't wait to. There was a temple there that was kind of expecting me, and I pulled into Ventura at 7 o'clock. And I sat down for like have something to drink actually, and relieved I got into Ventura. Only to realize that this is not a small little town. And the temple is like 12 miles on the other side. It was 12 miles away. And I'm thinking, my God, you know, how am I ever going to get to And there's, you know, you, I just, there's no place in this particular instance, there's no place to stay. And just had to keep walking. And it was just walk, 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 walk. And that was interesting, walking late at night in a town in America. You know, it's sunset and you just keep walking. And some people on drugs, well, actually, he was just a young guy on drugs, came up to me and started talking to me about his meditation practice. That was a hoot. That was really entertaining. And then there was another, the same night, a group of like maybe 19-year-old kids. These weren't gang members, but they were like, you know, this is like 10 at night. I guess that's not that late, but and they're just coming out of a convenience store, and I'm walking by, and they see me, and it's like, they're maybe 19. And there was one guy that was like the head of the gang or the group, and he was just blown away, and he was so interested, and he was so impressed by just actually the discipline of the monastic life. And so I was really, really appreciated that. Another thing that I had, personally speaking, which was very valuable for me, because you're, as I'm walking through this, these villages and towns, cities and towns, I guess you don't call them villages really, but these towns, you know, basically I'm homeless is what it feels like sometimes. And there was one town in particular, I got to a town, Moro Bay, I think, yeah. And I hadn't eaten that day. So I was hungry, and I got in. It was really cold. It was still the cold part of the trip. The first part was quite cold. And I got in kind of like 6 or 7, and it was cold, and I was hungry, and I didn't know anybody, of course. And I, frankly, just feeling really quite lonely, actually, is a kind of the mood that was in my consciousness. And, you know, it was really amazing. So I was kind of walking down the streets, and I didn't really know where to go. And I was. It occurred to me, actually, it was so cold, I might look for a homeless shelter. And I was kind of walking around, and it became apparent, like there were no homeless people on the streets. This wasn't the kind of place that there's going to have to be a homeless shelter. It's like a tourist town. And I stopped and asked the policeman for some question, directions or something, and he was really friendly. And that made me, just that friendly, like he looked at me in the eyes, he kind of said, what can I, you know, can I help you? And just this tiny exchange of being recognized, it was kind of a sweet, sweet moment. And it was really food for thought, you know, how homeless people are just ignored for the most part. And I heard this a number of times on my trip, how, and I've never thought of it this way, that homeless people are considered to be invisible. And I don't know what it is. Like just maybe in Edmonton, I've just never thought of homeless people being invisible. Maybe because there are so few of them, but relatively speaking. But it was really to think of homeless people, and that's how I felt when I was in Morro Bay. I just felt invisible, and any kind of this desire to just be kind of recognized. And of course, you think you're a Buddhist monk. People are going to recognize you, but that's not how it felt. And it seems like the more I kind of wanted to be recognized, the more everyone seemed to be ignoring me, just kind of not interested in what I'm doing. So that was, I really valued that experience because nobody cared. And I remember thinking, you know, can't somebody just like offer me a place to stay tonight? But anyways, it turned out I did find the perfect, every night that I was on this tudong, I found essentially the perfect spot to sleep. A little spot, in this case it was by, it looked like a kind of shut down electrical station, and right in front of the electrical station was a little park that has kind of been abandoned, and it was near the beach actually, and it was a beautiful little place, and it was quiet, and it felt safe, but it really made me feel even more than usual just how meaningful it is, I think, to say people without a home, not even necessarily to be given food, but just to be recognized, you know, just to look them in the eye and to give them some respect. And that was really valuable. There was one night which maybe I'll just share. It was kind of the night that sticks out in my mind as being the most memorable. It was actually July 4th, and I was, actually I can't remember the town. Yeah, I think I said earlier Laguna Beach, but this wasn't Laguna Beach. I was at this town. It was July 4th, and there was a Hare Krishna temple in this town. So I'm walking along the streets, and a couple of young Indian men come up to me, and they're very, very friendly, and they say, you know, oh, we want to take you to the Hare Krishna temple. They'd love to have you, and they'd love to feed you. And this is like late at night. This is maybe 8 o'clock. And I think, well, that'd be interesting anyhow, just to go to a Hare Krishna temple. I've never been to one, and I have no idea what to expect. So they take me to the temple, and I say, well, why don't you guys come in with me just to, you know, they know everybody there. And they said, with a very sweet look of what we call Hiri Otapa in Pali, this kind of sweet sort of look of mild shame, and they say, oh, well, we've had something to drink tonight. We really shouldn't go into the temple. And I said, oh, that's okay. I understand that. So anyways, they'd let me go in by myself. And this temple, I get in, and it was a beautiful sight. There was maybe 150 people, maybe 100 people, and it was like a gymnasium. And they were just having their, what do they call, prasad, I think is what the word is? Prasad. It's like a meal, something like a free meal. And it's a free meal for anybody. Just walk in and you get your free meal. But mostly who's there are like a lot of Indian people are there. And as well as a lot of maybe 25% Western people who are interested in Hare Krishna. And they were just super friendly. And I met the head, I'm not sure what the word is, it gets priest. And he said, please stay the night. You know, we'd love to, you know, and they of course tried to offer me food, which I couldn't eat. It was in the evening. And I decided I wouldn't stay the night. I just, even though it was a very beautiful scene, I thought, it's kind of warm and balmy, and I think I'll just go outside and find a place to sleep outside. So I went out and I found a place just outside of town, just kind of a little road going outside of town, and off on the left was a kind of a stream that had dried up, so it was kind of like a stream bed, and then as it went underneath the road, they kind of paved the culvert before it went, paved the ground before it went into the culvert, so nice little kind of clean cement base that I could kind of stretch my sanghati out on, and it was a nice balm. It was a really warm night, and the stars were out, and just feeling extremely free. And I remember, I think I communicated this with somebody through email at some point, how my sense of being a samana was really enhanced, more than being, at least for this first part of the walk, even more than being a Buddhist monk, just being a samana. Because this is what it was like in the Buddha's days. You had so many people who would, men and women who basically just, okay, they know there's something not right with the culture. There's something about the culture that they just don't want to follow. They don't quite trust, but they don't necessarily know what else to do. So there's this kind of class of renunciants. They go forth. And that's exactly what I felt like under that night. I just felt like totally alienated in a good way from my culture. Like, I'm not a part of that. And it was July 4th, and the kind of fireworks were going off, and yeah, it was kind of pretty and stuff. But my life, it's as far as food and shelter and clothing is concerned, just one day at a time. Take it one day at a time. And a real feeling of freedom came from just contemplating that. Just remember thinking, you know, when I get back to the monastery, this is something to really cultivate. This sense of, yes, okay, true, I'm part of a convention, and the form has its role. You know, the different aspects of the convention we use for training. But when, at the end of the day, the Buddha went forth, he renounced all conventions. Or, that's one way of putting it, it's not about conforming. It's not about rebelling. It's about letting go with the heart, and that doesn't mean. This is where I'm kind of contradicting myself now. It's not about getting rid of a convention. But it's about some kind of deep letting go on the level of the heart, which is kind of holding on to conventions. So that was really valuable experience. So I think basically I'll just I can probably leave it at that. It's 9:23 now. I'll just summarize saying it's the walk. It's not. It isn't for everybody, and I don't think it's not. There's many dangers that are accompanied with it. As a monastic, as a monk, there's dangers. suddenly, you're in a situation where, I mean, walking, you know, the path going down to San Diego. It's kind of one of the kind of pedestrian paths beside Highway 1. It's between the ocean and the highway. Kind of weaves in and out of beaches. And at one point, I just found myself, basically, it seemed suddenly, I'm in the middle of this beach, and it's like on a hot day, and I'm dressed, you know, in these robes, and everybody around me is, you know, I don't think there was anybody actually naked, but I tell you, it was something. I hadn't seen anything like that in my entire life. So that was kind of strange. And of course, nobody knows the conventions that I'm committed to. So I found myself in situations where it's like, yeah, it's if you weren't grounded in the Vinaya, with the knowledge of the Vinaya, for a monk it would be a disaster, I think. So I have great appreciation for so many people made this possible in so many different ways, both in the preparation stage as well as while I was traveling, people were in contact from time to time expressing support, not to mention just the countless people and honks and the different people in different Santa Barbara, I shouldn't name names, but I mean, there's so many different people along the way, and we're just so kind. And I think that's a big part about what spiritual practice is all about, is learning how to develop that and nurture it, because it's a really beautiful feeling. And it lays a very important foundation for the rest of our practice. So I offer that for tonight's reflection.